Now, let's return to the Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, on TalkZone.com.
This is Bob Woodson again, and you're listening to the Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why. Our guests are Ronnie Ortiz, or Pastor Arson, of the Richmond Outreach Center in Richmond, Virginia, and Omar Jawa, founder of Vision Regeneration in Dallas, Texas. And Omar, you were saying...
I was talking about one of the young guys who's in my program, who's been with me for years. He sent me a disturbing text. You know, I wasn't showing him enough attention. And so he was trying to rattle me with some of the stuff he was saying. And I had to remind him of who he was and who I was. And the reminder was not a check, but it was more of a thermometer. You know, I said, now, man, I'm gonna show you that you are the thermometer, but I'm the thermostat, you know. And if we want to turn up the heat, I'm going to turn it up on you because I know what you can become. But they take that type of checking. They take that type of real intense, you know, moving when they believe that you have their best interest at heart. So the difference is they don't, that when you have people who are just coming in from the outside, Bob, what they are doing is just monitoring behavior and hoping that these guys catch on. We are saying inside of your behavior, we're going to add another step, and that step is called Pastor Arson or Omar or Kiddo or whoever that we use to get these guys to transform their life.
And to piggyback off what Omar is saying, we are part of the fabric of the inner city, meaning yeah. We're not a program that comes in once a week or once a month or just when you do bad. We are a part of that neighborhood, meaning we're there just as much as the drug dealers there. We're there just as much as the gangs flash their flags and their colors. We're flashing our flags and our colors. We are a part of their everyday life.
Yeah.
So they come accustomed to trusting us because we're there every day. And the benefit of that is not only do you meet and build a relationship with the kid when he's at his worst time, but you also build a relationship with the young kids before they even get there.
Yeah.
Which now I'd like you to go further into the organization. It does. When I first met representatives of the ROC, I was impressed with something that I witnessed and heard, and that is the patience and persistence that you exercise in your outreach to children. I was told that you send a number of school buses every Saturday out to all of Richmond's public housing developments. And the first time that you did it, maybe one or two children boarded the bus and you let it sit and then you brought it back. And then the next Saturday, you brought the same bus out every week until the buses were filled. Tell me what you were doing by doing that.
You know, this ministry you're talking about, it's called our bus ministry. Right now we have about 21 buses, and they go out to all of our inner city projects and surrounding areas.
Wow.
We average 1,000 kids on every single Saturday, not the week, just one day for 3 hours to come hear life lessons, whether it's thou shalt not lie, don't steal, just lessons that they can use and apply to their life. But the two processes to making that happen was two things that we believed in. One is that we believe that we need to go to where the people are at. And that is what we were just talking about. The second part of the process is we don't believe that after we're training the inner city fabric, we want them to come out of that area and become who they're supposed to be. We don't want them to stay there. So we believe symbolically our buses are going out of there and getting them in the habit every week of getting out of their neighborhoods and learning something and becoming more than what they can be. And we're taking them out of that environment into a place of safety. We want them to become accustomed with that. And so for now, for eight years, you know, it's grown from, like you said, from really it was started in a Mazda Miata with two kids in the car and to into one van, into one bus, into one renter bus, until today where we have, like we said, 21 buses. And you know, on any given day, we can have up to 1,600 kids come from all rival gangs and all learning the same things, you know, and really just life bettering skills.
And tell us some of the other ministries you have there also. And tell me about the staff that was there to administer the program.
The Rock is unique in the fact that it has 140 different ministries, and it'll have 160 next year, I'm sure. And the reason why is we're always developing ministries as ways to attract others from the inner city to come to church. So we use our ministries as bait. God has called us to be fishers of men, so we use different bait for different fish. So we have a sports ministry for our athletic kids, or maybe our rougher kids in the neighborhood. You have your after-school program for the kids that want to, you know, do better. We have a food pantry for the parents that are not doing well with food. You know, we have what we call discipleship homes, which are homes for people off the streets or off of jail or facing drug problems. We have a drug addiction program. We have a Spanish program. We have a computer ministry. I can go on the list of all the different ministries that are going on there, but every one of them are unique, and what they are trying to do is reach a person that we're not reaching in a way that they need to be reached. We want to conform our church to the needs of our city.
One of the ministries that I found most intriguing is your tattoo ministry. Tell us about that. What is a tattoo ministry?
Well, this is the way, you know, we deal with a lot of people that are involved with gangs, a lot of people that have tattoos that they're ashamed of. And, you know, a lot of times it's been stereotyped, you know, if you had tattoos or you dressed or you looked a certain way, that you couldn't come to the church. And we didn't want that to be a stereotype for our church. You know, we always brag that our church is like Noah's Ark. It's two of every kind. We always want it to be that way because there's beauty in people that are different that we can learn from each other, and there's strength in that. And one type of people are people, obviously, with tattoos. And there came a lot of people that wanted their tattoos removed, and they wanted to, you know, cover them up, and they just didn't have the finances. And one of the brothers in the ministry who was a tattoo artist says, I'll do them, and I'll cover them. Instead of putting, you know, their gang or whatever it might be that was negative, we'll put something positive over that to let them know that there can always be a positive from a negative.
So you modify their existing tattoos to make it symbolic of something that is life-affirming.
Absolutely. They used to be part of, you know, Blood Crip gang. Now they're part of God's gang.
God's a gangster, son. Omar, you have a very unique approach to helping ex-gang members. You hired two of the foremost gang leaders in the city, and they minister to people coming out of prisons. Can you talk to us about that? And also, you do a lot on the, and I want each of you to talk to this, the whole issue of cultural attraction. How do you compete with this toxic cultural icons that we see, gangster rap and things like that?
Yeah, we go and we find the guys who are the leaders, and we ask those guys to become our ambassadors, as you just described them. And so we've been doing that. The guy who started the Bloods, he works for us. The guy who started the Crips worked for us. The last time they saw each other before they began to work with us, they were shooting at each other and went to prison and the whole nine. You know, we just hired a brother who was in prison for 13 and a half years. They gave him a 55-year aggravated sentence. And so, you know, you got all these kinds of guys who have this mindset, but they have the validity in the streets. The young people believe that they are the truth. So you can't make the young people's heroes villains. You're going to have to make those heroes live up to the heroic characters that they need. And so that's what we do. So I go out and figure out ways to recruit these guys and bring them in. And then you got, you know, something that you told me when I first started. I believe that a good heart needs a full stomach or they'll yield. And so we employ these guys, put them in schools and juvenile programs and bus drivers, and we make these guys mentors and ambassadors because they are the best interpreters of youth culture because they are on the ground. I told someone the other day that the best way, man, not to get blown up in the land, a field full of landmines, is to know where the landmines are. And these guys know where they are so they can lead you around it. And so we do that. And then on Tuesday nights, we bring them all together. We bring kids. We have five buses. I need to get where the Rock is, get 21. But I got five right now, Bob. And we pick them up from all over the communities. And we bring them to the POS Center, our Positive Exchange Center. It looks like a club, but it's Bible. We call it Bible study on steroids because you got DJs and guys getting up, you know, and kids from different rival neighborhoods getting up and feeling what peace looks like and feels like. I it was a quote that I read the other day. It said, peace is not the absence of conflict, but the ability to know how to deal with it. And so that's what we train those kids to do, is to look at a situation that could be conflicting, a guy who just shot at somebody, a guy who's in my own neighborhood that I don't like, and we let them have the experience that we filter. And we call it Tuesday Night Hype, and we've been doing it for 10 years, never had one fight. And then we have our Positive Exchange Network, which is our social network. It's our alternative to Twitter, Facebook, and all of that. And we give them a chance to blog and do their thing. And then we have Positive Exchange TV. CBS just signed on to do 4 shows. We've already done 2 shows where we show them the best of their culture and let them be our heroes, and we magnify them. So, you know, it's all in. It's all in. It's all the time. It's consistently pinging this culture to these young people start believing that we are the majority and not the minority.
And, Arson, I know that performing arts is also an important element of your ministry as well. Would you tell us about when I was there, I just saw some of the most talented young people I've ever seen. How important is that, what Omar was saying about
that? You know, we believe that every good and perfect gift comes from above, and God gives it to the kids for a reason. And we also believe that the devil is a liar and he's a thief, and he tries to destroy people with those same talents. What we try to do is put them in a position where they can use those talents in the most productive way possible, and let them feel what that feels like. And when they feel like that feels like, it's life-changing. Whether someone's a rapper, whether they produce music, whether they're a dancer, they choreograph music, or whether it's sports, wherever they're showcasing, we give them a place to turn their talent into a craft, and then an opportunity to showcase it. You know, we got 1,500 people and all sorts of connections across Richmond so that they can showcase their talents in a way that makes them proud and not ashamed of what they do. You know, you ask the question, you know, how do we combat with, you know, the gangster rappers and the heroes of the kids nowadays? And I think for us, it's really easy. I feel like our kids are being, I don't want to say brainwashed, it's more like brain stained, and their brain is being, you know, just really filthy and dirty. And it's our job to brainwash them in a good way to the truth, to give them the truth of what's going on. But that's hard to do when somebody looks at another person as a hero. It's hard to, you don't want to knock their hero down. But what I realized is that every young man, for instance, if he has a great father who does all the things that a father should, that man is the number one hero in that kid's life, the number one hero. But when the father isn't doing what he's supposed to, then that kid starts looking outside of his house to find another hero. And when a kid's choosing heroes, he's not always going to choose the right hero. So it's my job to put other men into this man's life, to these young men's life, to be that father hero. I get the biggest compliment I'm sure Omar and myself get is when a young person says, I look at you like a father.
Absolutely.
I look at you like a father. And when he says that, what he's saying right then and there is, you're my number one hero in my life. And even though Jay-Z or even though this person is someone I look up to, I look up to you more. And what is a father? A father is someone who's there every day. A father is someone that you can trust. A father isn't just trying to get your $12. A father, you know, and so on. And that is really our goal. And that is how we, I don't want to say compete, because there's no competition. When you're a father, you don't have to compete. But that is what we do to combat that.
Yes.
There's a fascinating article I read by a headmaster of the 4th Presbyterian School in Potomac, Maryland. His name is John A. Murray, and the title of the article in the Examiner newspaper here in Washington is New Moon and the Longing for a Hero. And John says that he posed a question to teenage students over the years with similar results. What is it that you look for in a hero, he asked them. And what the kids told him is fairness, self-sacrifice, character, nobility of purpose, humility, self-control, authenticity, and a savior. And that's what you're saying. That when when you look at the 15 grossing films of all times in America, these heroic qualities emerge from fantasy characters such as Fredo, the Lord of the Rings, to the real-life figures such as Jesus Christ, the Passion of Christ. With the Twilight Saga series, the latest film, New Moon, approaching $300 million, a new teen heroine combo may soon be joining that list. And also, the response that I'm watching kids to a lot of the movies, the current one, Blindside. That is, I've never seen such response to a movie, and that's kind of affirming what you all are saying. What has been your response? Have the kids seen Blindside? What is their response to that film?
Yeah, they've seen it, and they have the same reaction. I read the article, and he is right that the kids are more moved not by the ability of the lineman, but they're moved by the compassion of the woman, and what it looks like to love for no reason, because you know. I was looking at the American Idol deal the other night, and a lot of times we get caught up in the whole talent aspect of it, but it's really connecting with people who you have no reason to connect with, and you want to love them, and so those kids place heroic values on folk who love for no reason, who just invest because you need it, and I don't gain from it. And, you know, the kids that I've been with, they have seen that movie and they connect to it. And then just on the real, I don't know about Pastor Austin, but the kids in the hood I'm in, they ain't into vampires and all that.
You know, I was thinking as Omar was talking, I think, you know, when you're looking for a hero, what you're trying to do is you're trying to find qualities that you yearn for.
Yeah.
And I think in the inner city or in the hood, a quality that they're yearning for is love and someone taking care of them and what you see in the blind side. Maybe in higher society, they get that. They're accustomed to that, so they yearn for different things.
Yeah. I'm not so sure about that. When Omar attended this conference we had maybe 8 or 9 years ago where we brought 30 transformed black and brown inner city kids, and we brought them together with 30 white, upper income suburban kids and at the end of a 3-day exchange, some of the kids from Columbine in Springfield, Missouri talked about the emptiness that's in their lives is similar to some of the emptiness that were filled in the lives of the kids. And, we're going to continue this discussion right after our break. We're examining, youth violence and what transformed kids. And our guests are Ronnie Ortiz, or Pastor Arson of the Richmond Outreach Center in Richmond, Virginia, and Omar Jarwar, founder of Vision Regeneration. I'm Bob Woodson, and we'll return right after these messages.